Hey guys, before we get rolling here, I just want to thank those of you who have left me a review on iTunes. This helps me keep the podcast free, so please keep them coming. Tell your friends. I also want to thank those guys that have been sending in the questions. This is what this podcast is about. It's about getting you the info that you need to help become a better hunter. Now you can actually go to my website, interviewswiththehuntingmasters.com, and click on the Ask the Pro section. And you can send me your questions there, and you can even suggest a guest. And lastly, before we jump into this episode, I want to shed a little light on one of my sponsors, Sneak Tech Sneak Boots. I've been wearing them now for several years, and they've really upped my stalking game. I'm not a very sneaky person, and I find that extra added stealthiness that they give me has really, really improved my stalk. I believe in them so much that I've decided to give away one pair each month to a lucky subscriber. So if you're a subscriber, once a month, I'm going to be announcing a winner to win a pair of Sneak Tech boots. So go ahead and go check them out at sneaktech.com, and that's SneekTech.com. Let's get to the next episode. Hi, and welcome to another edition of Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by TheOutdoorInsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear. Today, we're talking with a buddy of mine, Ryan Carter from DC Outfitters in Utah. And Ryan is a big bull freak. And he's, pretty much only hunts trophy bulls. I mean, that's your thing. You're as an outfitter, you only pretty much pursue trophy bull, right?
Sure.
So, and you pretty much do just the limited entry units. Do you guide any of the general stuff or no?
No, they don't have the age class I like to pursue. In fact, a lot of the limited entry units, I don't even dive into because they've let the age class drop. Right. So some of the areas where I started guiding 15 years ago, they manage them for 3 to 4 year old bulls, and it's just not what I'm into chasing. So
right.
I've switched my game up. Mm-hmm.
Well, basically that's why we have you on, because we've gotten plenty of questions. We get questions all the time about elk hunting, but we've been piling up some questions on, how do I get to that next level of that next quality of bull? What are some of the things that the guys that are getting it done on these big bulls every year are doing? We've definitely had a lot of experts on, calling and just elk hunting in general, but it takes a different type of person and a different type of dedication, to get into what you're doing, So that's kind of why we have you on. And, why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself, and then, we'll roll into some questions.
All right. Well, I'm an elk guy. That's about all I'm good at. I'm just an average guy. I run a property maintenance company. I have 3 daughters, bachelor's of marketing. I run a few social media accounts on the side, including help out with the Total Archery Challenge event. So I stay fairly busy, but I'm, there's nothing real special about me.
Except that you kill 400-inch bulls. Yeah, nothing special at all.
Yeah, I do that sometimes.
Well, you and I got a lot in common. We're both – our other business is both in the service industry. We deal with management companies. I have 2 daughters. We're about the same age. And I understand you're quite the whitetail hunter. You like to whitetail hunt.
Dude, I wouldn't say I'm a good whitetail hunter. Actually, I'm not very good at all. I've killed a lot of 130 type bucks, but I love it. It's just different than how I grew up, because I grew up hunting in the West, and it's right. Squat and stalk, and it's checking wind and doing everything else. Whereas whitetails, for me, it's just sitting in a tree, reading a book and hoping one of them screw up. Because ultimately when you're tree stand hunting, that's all you do. You're waiting for them to screw up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more of a chess game. I think, I always equate it to, as Western hunting is more of like a, you know, a football game or a soccer match or something. And then, and whitetail's more of a chess game. It's more of a mind game than a physical game, basically, is what I'm getting at. It's learning patterns, figuring out behavior, you know, getting into the head of that buck. And then, you know, like you said, getting into a spot where you hope he's going to screw up and give you an opportunity. But you shouldn't be ashamed about shooting 130 inch bucks, man. I mean, this guy's been hunting their whole lives in perfect whitetail country, never killed a Pope and Young buck. So you're, you're doing better than most, believe me.
So. Well, in all reality, I look at whitetail hunting a lot like elk. I like to hunt the pre-rut. I feel like they move more. I look for pinch points. I look for rub lines, which elk run the same way. They kind of have their own rub lines. They have their own pinch points. You know, it's just a matter of tree stand placement and wind. Mm-hmm. Here, the wind's a lot different, you know, especially at high elevation. You get a lot of swirling wind and, you know, it's not as consistent of a pattern. Whereas when I go back east, I'm setting up tree stands mornings and evenings based on which wind pattern they got.
Right.
So it's almost the same game for me. So it comes okay. I wouldn't say I'm good at it though.
No. Well, don't knock yourself down. Like I said, man, guys out there wish they got 130 inch bucks. So I got a couple of questions that are not necessarily specific to killing big bulls to start off with, and then we'll kind of work our way in there. Because I get this all the time. A lot of guys don't have the time to go out and scout like you do, or, you know, I mean, they just don't have the time. You know, they get 1 week vacation a year to go hunt elk, and that's what they got. So if they get up once or twice for a day or whatever to scout, that's about all they got. You know, what are some of the things that you do if you don't have the time to scout? How do you like to hunt? You know, what's your take on it, or what would you suggest a guy do? Because you don't necessarily do that because you got time. But
well, in all reality, I'm the same way. You know, I only get 3 to 4 weeks that I use for vacation a year. The reason I'm successful where I'm at is that I've ran those same areas for years. You know, it's been a yearly thing, like setting up the cameras, going down, checking them, trying to find a few like killer spots and a few hit list bulls. And it just takes 4 or 5 weekends a year. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that I'm any different than most of those guys, other than I've been hunting the same kind of units for 15 plus years. So, but when I do hunt new country, like mm-hmm. I'm in the same ship they are, my only difference is, like, you know, right now I have like 15 or 16 deer points in Utah. So I know I'm focusing on the Henry Mountains. I'll have that archery tag in the next maybe 4 to 5 years. But what's going to happen is, you know, I'm already running cameras there. I'm trying to figure out like what my good archery spots are. And that's how you do it with these limited entry units that you wait forever on, is you don't wait till you draw the tag.
Right.
You start scouting early, trying to figure out, you know, where you want to hunt based not who you want to hunt, but where. So I think that helps, you know, but I mean, there's a slew of resources out there. Social media is huge. You know, if you drew a tag, you just weren't expecting it. It's just a matter of talking to the right people. And a lot of guys want to talk.
Right.
And so it's finding the right leads and checking out the right areas. And I think you can do it on most any limited entry unit and do fairly well.
Right. No, that's a good point. This, you know, if you're playing the point game, if you're playing the tag game, in these units that, you know, require, you know, 10 points or 9 points, and you don't have typically a lot of time every year, but if you put in a day or two, you know, every season, or, you know, go set up a trail camera and go back and look, like you were saying, just put some time and effort, knowing that you're eventually going to hunt there. I mean, that makes perfect sense. I've actually never thought of doing it like that because, I don't know, I'm always living in the here and now. I'm very, very rarely planning on where I'm going to hunt. You know, plus I'm always trying to get, you know, when I had with the TV show and stuff, I had to maximize how many tags I had every year, you know, the opportunity. So I always put in for stuff that I'm going to draw. I don't think about, oh, trophy quality or whatever. In my head, I'm like, there's a trophy something in, or there's something that I want to shoot in every unit, you know? So my whole strategy has always been, what can I draw in a couple of years, you know, so that I constantly have tags. Everybody's like, oh, how do you get so many tags? How do you get so many? Because I don't put in for, you know, these units that take 10, 15 years to draw. I do here and there. Like now I drew Utah. You know, I didn't get the greatest unit in the whole world, but it's a decent unit. And it took me whatever, 10 years or so to draw it. But
That's one of my favorite units. The one you drew this year, you're going to have a lot of fun. That's one of my favorite spots. So
yeah.
It'd be a great hunt. And 10 years is a long time.
Yeah.
So I think you're smart because you're not over the 12-point creep for San Juan or Boulder. If I was at that point, same place as you, that's the tag I would have took was the one you drew. So it is, you know, you're in a good place to be.
Yeah. No, I'm excited about it. And the fact that I've been there once already now, or actually twice technically, because I hunted the other side of it many, many years ago, when I shot my first, Utah buck, you know, the fact that I was in there last year hunting deer was, you know, it's comforting that I know the area a little bit, you know, and I saw a lot of elk actually. So that's kind of what made me put in for that unit, to be honest with you. I was like, yeah, I might as well try this. At least I know the unit a little bit. I don't want to go completely blind, you know? So,
yeah, for sure.
So let's get a little more in depth here. You started talking about if you're going to go check out a new unit, say, you know, there's an up and coming unit that you haven't really been hunting, but it's a good limited and you're hearing some good bulls coming out of here. What do you do to look at that unit as your starting point before you go start putting some boots on the ground? What are some of the things that you're looking for?
I always start by word of mouth.
Okay.
I look at the guys who's been successful there in the past. I look at some of the local guys. I'll fish around for a few guys that I know hunt that unit constantly. And in all reality, I start with a lot of shed hunters because I know a lot of them. And so
– okay.
And for elk in particular, archery is a little different, but as the rifle hunt kicks in, Utah kind of has a good old boy system where our rifle hunters get the best dates. You know, we're sitting at that late September, the 20th type
right.
elk hunt when it's just money if you're a rut hunter. So, and what happens with elk during the rut is as the rut progresses, the big bulls pull their cows into areas where there's not as many other bulls. They try to find a hole. And so typically that's where they shed their horns. So like if I'm hunting a rut hunt, I'll start talking to shed hunters, see where they're picking up sheds, kind of talk about which way to run from there, and then talk to people who've been successful in the past. Word of mouth is always the best.
Mm-hmm.
I use like Onyx maps a lot. I spend time on Google Earth. I look for transition zones. I look for feeding areas. Elk and mule deer kind of have to have a trifecta in places where they hang out. There's got to be feed, there's got to be water, and there's got to be bedding ground. Elk like benches. In the summer, they like acorns. During the rut, I look for grassy areas and aspens. If you can find that trifecta, you do a lot better. Where I guide, there's a ton of water, so it's not like hunting Arizona. I can't just set up on a station and know they're coming.
Right.
So I don't necessarily hunt water, but I hunt pinch points and I hunt those transition spots where elk will move from, you know, like I have a camera in the ponderosas where I know the elk pull out of the acorns and run right into the ponderosas for bedding down.
Okay.
I mean, that's a money spot. And, you know, a couple of my north-facing benches, those cameras produce big bulls every year. And I've killed a few of them off them.
Okay.
So, I mean, those are just a few things. Oh, and, I mean, trail cameras is my game, right? If you don't know, I mean, I run a fleet of them. That's how I find bulls.
like 50 to 100 of them, right? Something like that, like 70 cameras out at one time. Or
that's crazy. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And a lot of them just sit. I don't get to them every year. Mm-hmm. But I put enough out that I can. So what I do, I don't have glassing areas where mm-hmm. I hunt. It's a plateau. It's just a little different, you know, that if you're hunting like the Manti or the San Juan, you get on a point, you're glassing up herds and finding the right bull. Where right. I'm at, it's flat. It's kind of like hunting some areas of Arizona. And what I have to do is position all my cameras and find it, locate a few good bulls. And then what I do is once I find them, I shotgun the area with more cameras. Got so it. That I can find their rotation. If I can pattern them like preseason, the best time in my mind to kill a trophy bull is during the archery hunt.
Mm-hmm.
You can pattern them just like a mule deer does. Their area is a little bigger. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll run certain areas that take 3 to 8 days to do the full rotation, but they still have a rotation just like a mule deer does. And if I can find their rotation and find an area that they're consistently hitting, then they're killable. Whereas when the rut kicks in, they're all over the place.
Right.
It's, you know, as far as trophy hunting goes, I don't necessarily like the rut.
Right.
It's hard. I'd rather go hunt New Mexico where I can get a tag every other year and shoot a 330 bull while they're screaming.
Mm-hmm. You get a tag every other year in New Mexico? Gotta tell me which unit that is.
Yeah.
It took me 10 years to draw my first one, and I haven't drawn one since. It's been over 10 years. Oh,
yeah,
man.
Well, it's been 5 for me, so yeah, that's right.
But you used to draw
a few of those units every the year, yeah.
No, yeah, you're right. There is a few units that you can. So let's talk about this rotation a little bit. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that and kind of paint a picture for us that like what that really consists of, or what an elk is actually doing?
Well, I just don't think, you know, it's not like they find one meadow and they sit there all summer. You know, they constantly move. Elk are nomadic, like it from where the and then it's all about food. In reality, elk, you know, one day they're down in the acorns, the next day they're up in the aspens. Mm-hmm. Depending on the month, you know, July and August for me, I really focus on oak brush. I score big on oak brush. And they it's usually maybe an 8 mile difference, and it takes them 3 to 8 days to move it. But once you can figure out where that's at, you know, and it's not like it's consistent. Like they'll hit this camera this day and this one, and then this one and this one. It's not a round circle. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they cut that in half, and sometimes they go the opposite direction.
Depending on the wind.
Right. And I find the spot that they're most consistently hitting, like this camera, he's hitting every 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to put a tree stand on that tree where there's a pinch point where he has to walk through to get to that wallow or get to that creek. And that's my odds are the highest. It's just like with anything, you're playing an odds game, putting in for a tag, you're playing odds when you're hanging a tree stand.
Right. So well, that's like whitetail hunting right there. I mean, basically, that's why you killed 130 inch whitetails, because you're doing it with the elk right there. I mean, that's pretty much the same thing. It's figuring out their loop. Whitetail have loops. Mule deer have loops. I mean, the only animal that I haven't really noticed that has a loop is probably a pronghorn. But even them, they seem to have like a, you know, they like a certain spot with a certain type of conditions. And I haven't really figured out what that is, because you don't have to usually, because you're able to glass them up from far, you know, distances and stuff. But, you know, all the branch antlered animals seem to, you know, have this kind of, you know, patternable, you know, like you said, a loop. I've only heard it called a loop with elk until recently. In the last couple of years, I've heard, you know, referred to with a loop on mule deer and a loop on whitetail. But in my experience that I've seen, elk seem to be – now, this is contrary to what you just said. They seem to be a little bit more circular, like have this kind of like, you know – they're here, and then they're here, and then they're here, and then they're here. And it was pretty consistent. When I first noticed it, I don't know, it was probably in, I think in Washington, I was hunting Rosies, and I really noticed it there. I was like, dude, every 3 days, this bull's over here, you know, and over here, every couple of days, there's this group of elk is right there, you know, and it was like, oh, okay. But yeah, no, that's.
But I only notice it preseason.
Right.
Or postseason, you know, the winter time's the same way, but
yeah.
Anytime there's it's pre-rut, rut, or even kind of a post-rut, it's just sporadic. When they're in their normal like routines, just like us, you know, like get up, you brush your teeth, you go to the gym, you do your thing. I think they kind of do their same thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel what I do different, or what I change up, is I stop looking for the bull's patterns and I go back to looking at cow or, you know, doe patterns or whatever for the rut, because they're going to try, to stay on there. I mean, bull's a little different. They're pretty good about rounding them up and getting them to go where he wants them to go. But those bulls are going to be where the cows are at. Those bucks are going to be where the does are at. And they try to stay on their pattern. So, you know, if you're hunting the rut, I think your focus should be, and you're not trying to single out a specific bull, I guess that's the key. Where in your case, that's what you guys are doing. You guys are looking, you got, you know, your hit list, like you said. But if you're just looking for a, you know, to score a bull or a good bull, or whatever, just, you know, figure out what the cows are doing, and then you'll find them in the rut pretty much.
Well, exactly what you said. I get a lot of messages midsummer about guys frustrated, like, hey, I'm not getting any bulls on my camera, like cows, like crazy. Cows and calves are rolling through and rag bulls, but I'm not getting any like bulls I want to hunt.
Right.
And if they're hunting a rut hunt, they have a rifle tag, I tell them, you're fine. Leave it there.
Yeah.
Like, be patient, because the bulls will come to you. A lot of my bulls, I track them 30-something miles between September 1st and October 1st. They move a long ways just to get cows.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, I tell guys not to get frustrated. If the bulls come, stay with your cows if you're hunting the rut. If you're archery hunting early like what I do, move. Try to get in an area where the bulls are kind of bastard up.
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense. So you started talking a little bit about like landscape features and stuff. What specifically are you looking for to hang those cameras that you got going?
Well, so as far as cameras go, if we're looking at cameras, I hit it fairly early, and I hit it. So my main time to get pictures is right now. It starts June 20th to August 20th. So that's why I start mid-May hanging cameras like crazy. Cause I think I wanted to get up 70. My goal was 73 this year, and I'm done, and I only got up 57. So I'm a little short, but my main ones are up. But I had to have them all in by June 20th, because now they're rolling. The bulls are out more. I get more daytime pictures. August 20th, it shuts off. And not completely, especially if you got cameras like on wallows or spots they're rolling through or where cows are. But 90% of my content pictures all come in the next 2 months. Mm-hmm. So when I'm looking at that, I know, okay, I'm focusing on June and August. It's hot. So I'm putting them on north faces. I'm putting them on benches. I do use a lot of water. So if I'm looking on Google Earth, I'll pan over and look for a green spot that just stands out a little bit. You know, I had one of my best spots, in fact, where I killed Donna's bull last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's way down in the desert. I mean, we got up at 3 a.m. to hike out there.
Jeez.
But the way I found that spot is I was on Google, and I'm cruising through all the PJs,
right,
the pinion and junipers, and looking what's out there, and I find this stand of aspens,
okay,
just out in the middle of nowhere. And
wow,
sure enough, when I hiked out there, there's a seep that's just little tiny. I mean, there's nothing coming out of it, but for 4 or 5 feet, But the elk crew's out there and they go back. So the second her bull showed up on second day of the hunt, I knew right where he was going. It was just a matter of cutting him off.
Right.
And so if you can find those features, whether you're out in the desert or you're up high in the mountains, you know, look for a meadow that has a really super green, dense middle. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a water spot. Now, they're not always the best spots for cameras, but because no. elk don't wallow in the summer, right? But mm-hmm. they cruise through there. So if you can find a pinch point by those wallows, I put a camera on every time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if it makes sense to me because of whitetail hunting. I think that's why I get it more, to be honest with you. People, mm-hmm. people discount the whitetail hunting, in Western game all the time. I get it all the time. But it's that mentality that I think that you bring into the table. That's the, you know, the reason why you're so successful. I mean, I don't think I know it's the reason why you're so successful. So, now you got a bull that's showing up on one camera. You talked a little bit about shotgun in an area. So, I don't know. Walk me through a scenario. You got one showing up at one of these little seeps, or he's passing by a pinch point that's going out to a meadow.
Mm-hmm.
How do you move out from there to go find where you're going to put it? Obviously, I mean, you're seeing things too that make you, but I don't know. Right. Try to paint a picture for us.
Well, for years I was boots on the ground. So once I got that picture, then I'm diving off that ridge and I'm going to the nearest creek bottom, and I just work it all looking for flat spots and looking for water just to kind of see like where he's hitting. Mm-hmm. And seriously, up till like 4 years ago, that's all I did. It was a ton of miles. The last couple of years I've been able to go, okay, he hit me here. I got on Google. Well, there's a bench up here and it looks like a wallow up here and there's a big burn right here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll focus on trying to tack down within a 2 or 3 mile radius where he's crossing. And it's not, there's no science to it. In fact, elk hunting, I mean, it's all luck in the end. Like, it's 60% work and 40% luck every time for me. And so, you know, I just start blasting it with cameras.
Well, you're lucky SOB then, man.
I get lucky, yeah.
Somebody's eating their Lucky Charms. Oh, that's cool, man. I'm tempted to pull up Google Earth right now and kind of have you walk us through something. Although I tried this yesterday with Remy Warren and it was kind of like a little bit of an epic fail here, but I think I'm going to try it again. Let me see if that works.
All right, let's do it.
I don't want to pick a unit that you don't hunt. So okay. we're not giving away any of your spots, but, that way, I don't want to mess up your hunting here. Although I'm sure it'd be easier for you to tell me to look at this and look at that.
Will it just pop up on the screen here, or how's that?
Yeah, it will in a second. I'm uploading Google Earth right now. Give me a town to search in Utah that's next to a unit that you don't hunt.
That I don't hunt at all, or
That you probably don't hunt anymore, or that you used to hunt, or whatever. I don't know, something. So
let's do the Nebo unit. The Nebo is like, there's no roads on that unit, so it's kind of a that might be a good one to do.
All right. So Nebo. So what's the closest town? Nebo.
Payson or Nephi. Payson. One of the two.
Oh, Nephi. Yeah. Nephi, yeah. I've driven through Nephi. Okay. All right. Okay. Good deal. All right, I'm going to pull that up now. Let's see. We're going to make a couple of guys who just drew the Nephi, or excuse me, that drew the Nebo are going to be real happy with you.
It's actually, you know, I used to guide it. It's been about 15 years. That's where I started guiding. It's actually turning around to be a decent unit. It just, you know, got a little.
God, it's gonna be a little bit hard. So there's Nephi right there.
Let's see. All right. Where's it? Oh, there's the town. Okay.
Yep.
I got you.
So I'm just gonna drop you right here in the center of the mountains.
Okay.
Let's say in this bowl right here in the bottom right here, you found the hole. I don't know. Maybe we can find something.
It's kind of. Dude, I love Google.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, might be water right there, actually. Oh, no, it's not. Okay. So these are all the north faces here.
Right. Like you drew right to a cut.
Yeah.
You know, and so one thing about elk, it doesn't matter if you're New Mexico, California, wherever you are, elk run the same pattern.
And right.
What elk do is they go down in the mornings or down at night and up in the evenings. Or in the mornings. So they bed on high benches a lot, really high. And then they travel down and they're in the dark stuff in the mornings. So if you can find places where they're traveling down to, like the cut you had just pointed in on a second ago, is a perfect morning spot.
Yeah, I was looking at that. I was kind of hoping I could find something that had a little bit of whatever. But like even this one right here, it's like looks like they would come down. That's not as steep though, although this got this bull going on right here, and there's some open grass that they come feed in.
Yeah,
but not well, it's not see, as good.
Like I think and that's almost a perfect spot because if you look right at here. It, the one side of the ridge, you have oak brush. Mm-hmm. The other side is all pines, and you can see a bench right there off the peak.
Right.
Where's your mouse at? I'm trying to see your mouse.
It's I know because you're where my hand's at. There's a bench right here, and this looks like all oak brush and feeding right here on this slope, which would be the sunny slope, which I could see that, you know, in a cold morning them feeding here. But you know, if it's super hot, and like you said, as soon as it starts, sun
and
comes
then they're
up,
gonna move up and bed on that north side where there's pines, and it's gonna be a little cooler. And so then, like I would actually start in that saddle.
Right.
And I would start looking for trails and I'd start looking for wallows to see if I can find migration spots. But saddle right where you're at, a little to your left.
Right here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Yeah. The saddle right here. And the cool thing about this is the saddle connects to another complex that's very similar to this right here, where they got some more feeding in here. I mean, it's not quite as thick on these little north faces right here, but because it's kind of secluded.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like that might be something that where they would feed in here and then drop on, you know, pull up in here in the daytime to bed up.
Yeah. And then right on the edge of your screen, the left edge, you just lost it.
Oh, right here.
Unless left is backwards for us. Right there.
Yeah.
Where your mouse is kind of there in the middle of the pines.
Yeah.
That would be a good pocket to be like, get a close look at. We lost it again. It might be that on the bottom right. But, you know, there's a big face of pines and then there's a little pocket right to the right there, that white dots on it.
Yep.
That might be a good place to go look for a camera.
Yeah.
Because it's in the middle of a bedding area and it's just kind of a smooth transition spot. It's a bench, it looks like to me.
Yeah, it's kind of like a swale, like a funnel. You know, it's definitely a natural funnel here where they would definitely walk through.
Yeah. And you never know. You still got to get boots on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for sure, before you ever really figure it out, because that might just be a crappy spot.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you had a pointer from somebody you'd talk to that said, hey, this bench always seems to have a lot of elk in here, like, I'd for sure be running to check that out.
Yeah, see, this looks good, except for the fact that there's a road right here on the top. But
well, that unit's really steep, like really, really steep. The roads on the top don't mean anything because once you drop off, if you get in those switchbacks on the bottom left, like, it might be a killer spot in there because it looks like a good transition zone. Aspen's on the one side, pine's on the north, and then over on that face on the one side looks like oak brush again. So that's got the three trifectas. The only thing you're missing is water.
Right. And with that canopy, who knows if there's water in here? There might be a little something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, this whole system right here looks pretty good.
Back in the day, right where you're at, that used to be a money spot. Like, that was really good way back when. But I have no idea now. I've been down there in years and years.
Yeah. See, like, this down in here looks like there might be water down here. I don't know if there is or not, but
hold
on. Let me change it up.
Yeah. I could spend all day on Google. I love it.
Yeah. It's a neat tool. I remember when it first came out, nobody was nobody really used it for hunting. Nobody knew what the hell it was.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been using it for 12 years already. So.
Wow. Yeah, I definitely haven't been using it that long.
Well, you used to have to pay for the, like, this view. It used to be Google Earth Pro or whatever.
And yeah.
I was paying for it. So.
No, it's really nice.
What about something like this where, you know, like you got the oak brush and stuff like this on, and then
that almost looks a little too dry.
Too dry, right?
Almost like that's too hard of a south face. Like maybe like that might be really good post rut, maybe even winter grounds. Because it does look sunburned pretty bad.
Yeah, so I think it's facing west, southwest, so it's pretty much in the sun all the time.
But the north face doesn't look bad.
Yeah.
And like, I have no idea where you're at right now, but that's still.
I don't know where I'm at either. I'm just kind of, I'm just kind of panning around somewhere above Nephi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's another thing I love about Onyx is it, you know, that base camp divides your units for you. If you're on private, it tells you whose it is, and you can avoid staying, you know, keeping on the public land and staying out of the private. And that's such a cool tool. And I love that I can download the maps and look at it offline.
Yeah.
But
I could actually pull that up on here too while we're talking, but it just takes a lot longer to download and harder to find stuff at first. I think it works better as an app than it does on the desktop.
For a podcast? sure.
No, definitely for a podcast, but
yeah.
So I know it's hard for you to see it cause you're looking at a phone, but so from this big aerial view like this being up this high, where would you fly to? Cause this is how most people are going to look at this from,
you can easily start telling the north faces from the south faces.
Right.
So for me, it's a matter of looking at those north faces and finding super green spots. I'd start panning in on the really green ones, you know, and I see one middle left and I see one top left. And then we look pretty dry through the right, but
yeah,
I don't know. It's just picking spots and zooming in and trying to see, okay, I'm this far from the road and this spot looks super green. I probably need to get in there and check it out.
Yeah.
You know, and then a lot of times I'll chase
this spot right here. Looks good for deer for me.
Oh yeah. No, it looks money.
That's like a
deer especially spot. Where you got all those snow cuts in there.
Yeah. That definitely looks like a deer spot for me.
Yeah. No, it's fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you use it for whitetails much?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe when we get done here, I'll show you a couple of things that I look for. I actually used to help guys out all the time. It was part of I used to do consulting for like land management and stuff like that for whitetail. And you know, I would just, guys would send me their coordinates of their property. I'd look at the Google Earth and I'd be like, okay, set a camera here, set a camera here, set a camera here, set a camera here. Cause that stuff that you're looking for in the elk woods is so much more obvious in, you know, farmland and hardwoods.
And whitetail country. Yeah.
Oh, it's just like, yeah. It's like there's signs and flares popping up, you know. Actually, one of my buddies, I've actually helped several guys. He was, you know, sending me pictures from his phone, and you know, I was like, hey, where should I set my stand up? Da 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 da. And I'm like, all right, well, just send me, you know, drop me a pin where you're at. And I pulled up Google and I told him sit here, and he killed a 145 out of that stand. Just, and I've never been to the place.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of just, you know, knowing how deer use the terrain. Yeah. So.
And they're all this, like, it's just what I was saying about elk. Like, they like to travel down at night and up in the mornings. And I mean, whitetails kind of have their same patterns. Mm-hmm. You know, you look for the Christmas trees, you look for the pinch points in the creek bottoms. You can figure it out pretty quick. Cause they're, I mean, as much as everyone tries to tell you like, oh, that old buck's so smart, dude, he's mm-hmm. just got good instincts.
Right.
That's all it is. It's not like they're that smart. I mean, they outsmart me all the time, but I'm not that smart either.
Well, you know, you got to understand something. How many days a year do you hunt? I don't know.
Oh, maybe 30.
I hunt almost 100, which is a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah.
The last couple of years, it's probably been about 80. I've been an average at about 80. So that deer is living that 365 days a year. He's avoiding danger. Yeah. He's avoiding predators. 300, you know, and that elk is doing the same thing. Yeah. I mean, they live it and breathe it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We go home and, mm-hmm. you know, you know, hang out with our families and do whatever. We're not thinking, I mean, some of us think about it all day long, but he literally has to do it even in his sleep. Like everything he does is about surviving. So like you said, smart, maybe not smart, but he's learned what keeps his ass safe, you know.
He's trained. He's trained. Yeah.
So, right. But no, man, I think that's there's a lot for people to take away from this episode and really start thinking about what they're doing and how they're doing it. I think you, like myself, you're a behavioralist. You're kind of learning what they do and how they do it and why they do it. And then you can, once you do that, you could take that and apply that in Colorado. You could take that and apply, you could take it anywhere you mm-hmm. want to go. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, because I know there's a lot of guys out there that are really, really good hunters, but they're only really, really good hunters where they hunt. And that's because they figure them out there. If you can figure out why they're doing what they're doing there and take that and apply it everywhere else, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, that's what it's all about.
That's why I can say, like, elk is my game. I mean, I've killed a few mule deer. Like, I've killed a couple.
Nice ones back there.
Well, they're not even nice. They're just okay. But, you know, I've hunted long enough to know, but the elk, I learned on units that I could glass, and I could see their patterns and I could see their behaviors. And in fact, I learned about their rotations on the Dutton unit, where mm-hmm. you can sit on a peak and glass, like, I mean, miles and miles. And I would figure out, okay, I spotted him here. And 2 days later, I spotted him here. And then 2 days later, he was here, and then he disappeared. And on day five, he was back at the first spot. And that's when I started figuring out their rotations on units that I can glass. I've just applied it on a unit that you can't glass. People don't kill a lot of big bulls, but because it's so hard of an area to hunt, the age class is bumped. So I've just figured out how to do it. But I learned it on other units because their behavior is mm-hmm. the same.
Right. Right. Well, awesome, man. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. Where can the listeners find out more about you and your outfitter business?
You know, I do a lot of social media stuff. I have a DC Outfitters Facebook page and my personal page, Ryan Carter. I mean, I kind of hit and miss post on both. Mm-hmm. Instagram's Ryan at DC Outfitters. Twitter's the same, I think. I don't run a web page. I really only guide like two or three guys a year because I focus on quality over quantity.
Right.
I'm not interested in going full time with guiding. So I just do things a little different. I book out usually a year in advance. So I don't need to market a whole lot. I just like to.
Right. Right.
I like what I do and I like posting my pictures and I think a lot of people like it. So
yeah. I mean, your Instagram page is killer. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that's how we got to know each other. Really? I mean, Yeah. Started following you on Instagram and you started following me. And we just, you know, I was like, oh man, this guy's got always got great stuff going on. And so.
Yeah, with elk anyway. The rest of my stuff's par.
Well, we got to change that, man. So.
Yeah.
Like I said, the door is open. If you want to go whitetail hunting, I'd love to take you. Just,
I want to jump in because I think I want to try spotting stalking one. That sounds interesting.
Oh man, it's the best. Two years ago was my, well, other than coos deer, cause I've done it on coos deer, but, my first Midwest whitetail spot and stalk was in 2015. And I was just like, oh, this was like the best thing ever. I don't ever want to get in a tree stand again.
Oh really?
No, I don't know about that. There's a lot of, you know, people don't realize how much you get to see and how much you get to like take in when you're sitting on in a tree stand and things are just walking by you. Don't have any clue that you're there. That's where, I mean, that's how you learn behavior. I mean, you just sit there and watch. So, but no, I love tree stand hunting too.
I like the tree stand cause I don't have to, for me personally, I get the buck fever where I don't get it on the ground. I'm too in my head when I'm on the ground. Cause I'm like, well, I could do this and move this way or the wind's shifting. I got to hurry and go over here. I've got to change my strategy constantly. I don't get the buck fever. It's like I range them, I kill them, it's done. Right. But on whitetails, like you're tied to a tree.
Yeah.
Like they have to screw up. They have to take this line. They have to drop their head at this point.
And you're like, oh, here he's coming. He's coming. He's coming. Yeah, he's coming.
My heart's going out of my chest and my buddies make fun of me because that's where my buck fever shows through. Because here I don't get it. Not at all.
Yeah. I always get it right after. I'm like laser focused on the whatever it is that I'm doing, and like I lose it right after, man.
Yeah.
I shot Swamp Donkey last year in New York. I was like, I shot him, and I was like, I was in disbelief. I was like, I just shot him, especially because I've been hunting that bastard for 4 freaking years, you know? And I was like, I almost fell out of the damn tree stand. It was a good thing I was tethered in pretty tight because I would have fell right the hell out. I was sitting there talking to the camera and I'm like, you know, yeah. So
anyway. That's cool.
Cool, man. Well, I wish you luck this season. I'm sure we'll be in touch and
thanks, man.
You know, I'll be out in Utah in August. So if you're around, maybe I'll see you.
Well, if I can kill out early, which is my plan, I always like to try to get them done in that first week. I might come up on the Manti for a day. I love that unit.
For sure. Thank you. Appreciate that.
You bet, man.
Cool. I guess we'll talk to you next time.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
Bye.